Talk Radio. We say what we want.
Radio. This is Max and Friends, and I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome, everybody. That was just a little bit of a remix for you, Jingle Bells. You know, I love the holiday spirit, but I'm getting a little bit sick of the holiday song. So I figured, you know what? The only way that I can entertain you all is if I remix it, in which, happy holidays and a special happy Hanukkah today. Got a couple more days left of that, and then the craziness of Christmas begins. I mean, I felt it before Thanksgiving, but I'm already seeing it now that Valentine's Day stuff is coming out in the stores. Too much too soon. Don't you all agree? Well, speaking of too much too soon, there's never enough when I'm here in the studio. We got a great show tonight. We've got an amazing haute couture designer, Farah Angsana, in the studio. She's going to be here in just a bit. An amazing designer, everyone. I've seen her shows. You know, it's like when there's people in the fashion industry who try to be, you know, really haute couture designers, they don't know what they're doing. And then they put their label China underneath. It makes my skin crawl. So tonight we're going to learn the authenticity of couture. And then following that, we've got, you all know him, Joseph Lumpkin is back from Fifth House Estate Publications. We love his books. I mean, we really do. And y'all have been like telling me we need to get on top of this. There's so much going on, Max. We want to hear about some new things from Joseph. So he'll be here after our girl Farah's in the studio. But before then, I've got to say hi to Rima. She's listening tonight. And Cindy. Speaking of shout-outs, it's a bunch of birthdays. Y'all are born in December. And especially all of my LA Talk Radio family. Nikisha Michelle, happy birthday. Tony Sweet, Nicole Bloom. Tina Hansen, happy birthday. Y'all coming up. And then Jerry. And then Yaya. And then Malik Sashik and Bree. Happy birthday, everybody. I'm so like, December. December is here. All right. And it's almost gone. I can't believe how fast time flies, doesn't it? Well, you all know The Buried Life was on last week. So excited to have them here with us. And it really made me think, what would I want to do before I die? I have compiled a list. I hope you all have compiled your list. You know, Farah Ansana is coming on the line right now to LA Talk Radio, Max and Friends. So before she's here, I all want to ask you all, before you die, what do you guys want to do? Keep that list. Think about it. Write your list. And then you know what? Let me know about it. Email me at max@maxsuchi.com. You know I respond to you. You can find me on Twitter, too. So if you want to Twitter with me there, go Twitter with me there. And now, I've got to let you know about a fantastic. I love this. Y'all know about my favorite things. So I'm like Oprah, in essence, of favorite things. And I post my favorite things on my To The Max and Max and Friends fan club page on Facebook. So find my favorite things. I post every day. And recently, I've discovered an amazing company called Variety Cruises. Now, Variety Cruises, they're going to show you destinations like no other conventional cruise liner can, okay? They're going to take you on voyages such as the Tales of the Adriatic, or how about going to Egypt and Jordan and learning about the kings and pharaohs, or how about a voyage to the rivers of West Africa? Whichever destination you choose, VarietyCruises.com is the way to go. Small ships for inquisitive minds. They're going to destinations like no other conventional cruise line can. VarietyCruises.com. And of course, if you need an airfare, go to Delta.com. Flights are on sale now. Delta.com. All right, everyone. Well, I've got to talk to you tonight about the authenticity of couture. Now, for those of you who don't know, my guest of the hour right now, Farah Ansana, to those of you who know the stylish international designer, well, The Rebirth is a return to the Farah they first met in 1999, when she made her debut in London, a return to haute couture and high fashion, evening wear for women. To those who are aware of Farah through, you ready for this, the daring and elegant menswear she had been creating in the years since she Paris in 2000, it's a next logical step. To Farah herself, it represents the opportunity to go back to what originally inspired her to become a designer, the thrill of blending fantasy and reality together to make women beautiful and glamorous. I welcome Farah to Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio. Hi, Farah.
Hi, Max.
I thank you so much for being here tonight. And I know it's like 4 o'clock in the morning where you are, so we really appreciate you being here, because it's a burning question that I have, and the authenticity of couture. So I would love for you to enlighten us and tell us about yourself first and how you got involved in this crazy world of fashion.
First of all, good morning over there. And I started in fashion when I just got married by now, 1 year and a half. And I went to the fashion schools, and then I didn't start my fashion business since then. And that's it.
And you've just have like been all over Milan, Paris, London, New York. You know, I want to ask you, Farah, which do you think are the most important markets for a designer these days?
To show?
Yeah, to show.
To show will be in New York, Paris, and Milan. But mind you, these three cities are wonderful cities to show, but each presents individually.
And now what about the consumer? Where are those markets?
The consumers are everywhere. So the buyers, the majority of the good buyers, they only come to New York, Paris, Milan, and some of them goes to London, but the point is that not all of them go to London.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to ask you, you know, there's these new fashion weeks like in Miami, in Los Angeles, in Russia. Are these even markets worth doing as a designer?
I've been to several Fashion Week, as you mentioned, and I never participated. I just went there as a guest. But I don't think, you know, fashion has become so easy access, the same like luxury. The point is that people have to know that those are not real fashion. Because those organizations are making money out of the general public and the fashion newcomers.
Now, you know, speaking of fashion newcomers, you know, I really, this is something, you know, my mother was in the fashion industry for a long time, and Women's Wear Daily was, you know, the Bible of the fashion industry for New York. And now with the computer and technology, we have all these fashion bloggers. Do you think the blogger ruins the fashion industry as a, because they're not like honed fashion experts?
I wouldn't say that all of them are, but I certainly against that fashion amateur who wants to comment something with their own personal style and personal belief that they comment in their blog. Not necessarily is true, because they never go to schools like we all are, we all were. They never worked for any fashion publication before, mm-hmm. and they never they work in fashion, so they just blog what they think and what is their style. Some designers might not be their style, and they just bitch about the designers or praise the designer who make just a t-shirt and jeans like the gods of fashion. And you can see from all these bloggers if they are very professional.
Now, you know, I've been to your shows, and I see many of these bloggers there. You know, they either try to get in or they sneak their way in, or some of them are actually invited. You know, how do you feel as a designer? You put so much time and effort, and you especially, because you really studied couture. You've studied, you know, with Assage. We'll talk about that in a moment. But you've done, you know, you've done clothing that some of them take how many yards of fabric, meters of fabric, and how many days to produce. And then you have someone who comes to your show and, you know, they write, oh, I don't understand why it's $30,000 or $40,000. How does a designer, how do you feel as a designer to have someone who doesn't understand the authenticity of couture comment on it?
How do I feel towards these people, you mean?
Yeah.
I just smile.
I just have a message for them.
I do not know a lot of things in fashion. I'm every day I learn, but I don't comment.
Right.
When I comment, mean that I have a lot of experience instead. I only say something that I believe in, that I understand, and I have the experience in. I comment on those subjects. Otherwise, I don't. I just like to learn. I just like to listen and learn, because life is full of mystery.
It is full of mystery, and it's also full of a lot of authenticity. And I would like to talk about the authenticity of couture. You know, there's nothing worse than seeing a label couture and made in China. You know, this is one thing that gets under my skin so tremendously that it makes me want to scream. You know, there's these American designers, they think, oh, we're couture, and they make everything in China. So can you explain to us, because the burning question, I've had a lot of people email me today when I put on Facebook, you know, the true meaning of couture, and we're going to have someone to tell you exactly what it is. Can you explain to the average listener out there and also the experienced listener what couture really is?
There are two type of when they call it couture. One is couture that you can use couture, only couture, because couture means handwork. And that apply only when it is 70% of handwork. Then you can put couture. But haute couture is another thing that is a very sensitive issue that we are not permitted to use it. Haute couture it only exists in Paris, not in France, but only in Paris. And you have to be a member or invited guest of the Chambre syndicale de la couture à Paris. It means the French Fashion Federation that has been going on since 200, 300 years ago. This is the embodied of the French fashion industry, the highest fashion for haute couture. And the collections have to be 100% made in Paris atelier, not in suburb of Paris. They have to be made 100% in Paris atelier, and with the rules of minimum 18 people in the atelier under the French law.
Under the French law. So it really is a serious matter. And, you know, it's to me, when I see haute couture made in China, it just drives me crazy. And so many American designers think that they are couturiers or haute couturiers, and they're in fact not. Now, I want to ask you, speaking of, you know, who are some of the designers from the past, really couture designers, that have inspired you with your collections?
I would say Valentino.
Valentino, he knew the woman's body like no others, no?
Yes, Valentino, it's the only designers that made me want to be in fashion industry. And I grew up with all his work in a magazine, that by looking and my mom and my sisters wearing Valentino. And when I see the work and the craftsmanship and the embroideries, and just magnificent, it just inspired me that, you know, I want to be in this kind of world. And when I grew up, I asked to study fashion, and I dig even deeper and understand the meaning of fashion and the meaning of what is the fashion which is now we are looking at, and the real fashion of the old way of making gowns and the new way of making gowns. And he retired because his ladies are already getting at some certain age, you know, so it wasn't an appropriate time for him to retire. And the new designers that took over doing a wonderful job for the house.
Right. Now, I want to talk to you about embroidery, because you have pieces where there's embroidery that have taken many, 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 many hours to create. And you have actually had some pieces that have been done for you by Lesage. So explain to the American listener right now who Lesage is and the brilliance of the man that does this phenomenal embroidery.
Lesage, Francois Lesage is his name, and then he took over from his father when his father died in the 50s, in 1950s. And Lesage is old-fashioned, appointed by the French Fashion Federation and also the government, from doing embroidery for haute couture and for the royalty for many, many years, from generation to generation. I had the privilege to work with him for the past couple of years since I became a designer. And the work is a framework, and it's a tumble framework embroidery. It consumes more than about 300 hours to up to like perhaps an average from 300 hours to 800-900 hours of embroidery. Wow. A very intense embroidery. And it's beautiful each time when I go to Lesage Atelier, I see all the archive, and I just could not even speak. Yeah. I was in another world. It's like I died and I went to heaven and came back again.
Now, speaking of death, you know, Lesage is well in his 80s now. You know, what's going to happen when he actually does die? Like, what do you think is going to be like another dynasty that has come to an end, no?
No, because he is a very, very, very intelligent gentleman, that he sold his company to Chanel Group so that the couture world will be still exist when he is no longer available.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, he is truly a master at his craft. And the pieces, you know, you can go online, everyone, and check him out. The name you spell there is L-E-S-A-G-E. And just look at the wonderful embroidery he's done there for everyone from Calvin Klein to Yves Saint Laurent to Chanel to Farrah and Son. And a beautiful, beautiful work. Some of his pieces have ranged $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. Unbelievable pieces. Now, Farrah, I want to move forward with you. And I want to ask you, you know, New York Fashion Week is coming up in just a couple of months, February, again here at the Lincoln Center, No More Bryant Park. Are you excited?
Excited for what? I don't get easily excited, Max.
Don't you hate that question? You know, and I love seeing you backstage. It just shows everyone, oh, Farrah, are you excited? You're like, oh, I just need a nap. I mean, it's so much work to come to New York and to perform. You know, it's not just a show, it's a performance. And you do it so well. And, you know, we all adore you. And can you give us some previews for winter 2011?
You just have to wait for the next year.
Oh, it's so, you know, it's come on. You can share the secret.
Do you know, Max, patient is the essence of life as well?
That I do know, but also I know that there's hidden Asian secrets for 2011 winter. So what does Confucius say?
The what?
What does Confucius say for winter 2011?
I don't even know, too.
So now, listen, it's fun. You know, we have our one-year anniversary coming up of knowing one another. I first discovered you when I was doing Fashion News Live, and automatically you were my number one designer for the New York shows.
Thank you.
You're really the only true designer. That's my personal opinion. So if you're going to write anything, write it to me, people. But, you know, there's a lot of celebrities during New York Fashion Week, and a lot of these celebrities now have become designers. What's your take on the celebrity designers such as Beyonce and also, you know, Carrie, we all call her from Six, but Sarah Jessica Parker, who's designing for Halston.
You know, Max, I think that the whole fashion industry have changed. I think that I should, as a fashion designer, turning into an actress as well. I think I should change my career into acting.
So I think you should.
I don't have any qualification. I don't have any formal training in acting class or in acting school, but maybe I can act. As long as I can act, I can be an actress. Don't you think so?
I've seen you in your work. I've seen you in your acting career, and you do very well.
Thank you.
But you know, what do you think of, like, you know, these designers, Zac Posen and Isaac Mizrahi, like going to the Target trend? Is it worth it for them?
I think it's worth it because they are using their name for the general public to buy a piece of them, which is great. I think that they're doing very well, and the Target have a very good marketing strategy, and the American design is doing good in this, and because they get in touch with the general public. You see, in fashion, they have many different kind of. They have many different kind of directions. You have high street fashion, you have sportswear, you have evening couture collections, and you have the high-end designers couture collections. So it's many different directions, and what they are doing, which is good, I think it's perfect.
I could not agree with you more, and some of them should stay in Target. But now let me ask you a question. I just got a text message via my T-Mobile sidekick, and Emily has asked, what modern-day designer could be the future of couture?
You need training. You need years of training. A couture designer, it's you must have the vision. You must have the – you're born with it. And you can – and then after that, you have to train. And some people – some designers just don't have to be trained. It's you have the gift. And for modern, unfortunately, in today's fashion school, they teach you a different thing. They teach you more a practical way, but not a couture way. So as a couture designer, you must have the flair, to understand the fabric. Each now, character.
Do you think there's any designer right now that has that flair?
Sorry?
Do you think there's a designer right now that has that flair that could go into the future of couture?
The new designer right now?
Yeah.
For American or for the European?
For European, American, who do you think is that next person? Who will be the next Yves Saint Laurent? Who will be the next?
There will be no next. There will be no next because no one can take them away. And it's like no one is going to take Whitney Houston's voice. It's over even though, but still it remains. And no one will ever take. No, somebody is going to be a new person, but it's not going to replace another person.
Right. So, Emily, I hope that answers your question. Thank you for it. Now, Farah, I know that you're starting an online store, and we can find it by going to your website, which is Farah. Everyone write this down. FarahAngSana. Sorry, Jackie, for the spelling. But my listeners know how to get there. So go to farahangsana.com, everyone, and you can see the talented work that Farah does there. And also, Farah, tell us about your online store.
My online store will be up before Valentine's Day, and hopefully that I could offer general public a piece of Farah Angsana, which is a couture spirit, but not a 100% couture, because that I don't sell couture collections there. I will probably sell a beautiful couture shawl, beautiful embroidery shawl or scarf, and tops and coat, jacket. That is something that is easy to wear and easy to use.
Well, you know, like you've said, coats have become the new jewelry. And that was a quote that you said while you were in Connecticut last time. And, you know, I really have understood that to be true now. I think people are really looking to the market for amazing coats. So I know that you're designing some fantastic ones.
You know, before ladies loved to buy jewelry to accompany the clothes, to accompany the dresses, and go to the parties and beautiful cocktail parties, gala, balls, benefit. But today's women seems to explore their coat from fur to embroidery coat. So I'm launching a new line, which is called Couture. And that is only for coat. And just remember that if a beautiful dress, a woman wants to go to a beautiful gala and ball and benefit, things like that, they need to have something over the beautiful dress. So that is will be a coat during the cold days. A perfect, beautiful coat. It's a new jewelry to accompany the dress.
Well, and it's very cold here right now, so we really wish that your line, Couture, would quickly and be finished quickly so that women could start buying them up, because I know I've seen your collection and you really create masterpieces. So thank you for having the vision to dress women properly these days and with the eye of a true couturier and a woman who knows style. Farah, I've got to ask you one more question, and that's for you right now, women want to know. I just got a Twitter message. Women want to know what the spring 2011 colors are. So spring, what are the colors for this spring coming up?
You know, I don't go for the trend of the colors because I never believe that. And then I never follow trend color. Choose the right color for your skin tone. Don't choose the trend color because it's not going to work for you. Like me, my skin color, it would never work for me to a dirty rose. Like a dirty rose, like an old rose, that never works on me. Mm-hmm. And if your skin color is dark, look for a brighter, nice color. If you are fair skin, look for more darker color. Basically, choose the colors that suit your skin tone.
Choose the colors that suit your skin tone. Farah, I've got to thank you so much for being here tonight. It's been a pleasure having you on Max and Friends and LA Talk Radio. And hopefully we've answered the question, you know, what is the authenticity of couture? So now that people who didn't know can understand really the roots of couture. Thank you, Farah, for being on tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, Ben.
And I look forward to your collection in February for New York Fashion Week.
And I can't wait to show you and all the Americans.
I'm so excited.
Me too now.
And Farah, I have a message for you, but I'll tell you after the show.
Sure. Same to you, Max.
You're a fashion designer, not a fabric supplier. Farah Ngsana here on LA Talk Radio's Max and Friends. Thank you so much and enjoy the rest of your morning, Farah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Here we go, everyone. That was a great segment. Y'all know what couture means now. Farah puts me into a sultry mood with that voice, and now I'm picking things up because we've got a whole part two of the show. We've got Joseph Lumpkin coming up in just a bit. But before that, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. This is Max and Friends, and I'm your host, Max Tucci. We just had the amazing, talented Farah Ngsana, and of course, we found out what the authenticity of couture was. That was Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Happy holidays, everyone. Speaking of holidays and going down in history, I've got to talk to you, Mr. Joseph Lumpkin, because you are a man that's going down in history with a bunch of books all over the place. You are telling everyone the truth about religion, theological discussions, and we're glad to have you back on Max and Friends. Pull up your mic and welcome.
Hello, Max. Thanks for having me. Yes, it's causing a little bit of problems on this side in the Deep South, but we'll keep pushing forward.
Right. Nonetheless, there's a whole world out there, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
With people eager to find out what's going on and the truth. I think the truth, as you know, our Bible does say, sets us free. So let's talk about setting free. And, you know, tonight we had originally talked, we were before the show discussing the Dead Sea Jesus. And this is a new publication for your publication house, which is Fifth Estate Publications. And I would love to hear about this book and what it entails.
Well, I'll give you a quick synopsis. It's one of the more interesting books. As we know, the Dead Sea Scrolls were found around 1946, 1947. And if you're a conspiracy theorist, this is going to be right up your alley because it took these guys many, many years into the 1960s before they started revealing some of these lesser-known books. And pressure was being put on the scholars. It was being controlled by Israel and their archaeological and theological departments. And you can see when you get into this particular book why they probably wanted to keep it under covers for a while. It turns out that you had a lot of scrolls, but you had one item that was not a scroll. It was a piece of stone with ink written on it, and it was referred to as the Vision of Gabriel. Mm-hmm. Now, let me digress just a little bit and tell you what this is all about. At the time that it was written, about 50 BC, there were three sects of Judaism visible and active in the area. The Sadducees, the Pharisees, and the Essenes. Now, the Sadducees believed in free will. They didn't believe in an afterlife. They only followed the Torah, and their whole thing was doing the daily law like the priesthood. The Pharisees that was more of a common man's Judaism instead of the elitist that the Sadducees were. They believed in kind of a predestination, free will kind of thing. They believed in the resurrection. And they had the Torah and just hundreds and hundreds of oral traditions. But because of the Hellenization that had come in, the influence of the Greeks and other things, the Essenes had broken away, and they were what we would call a fundamentalist sect. They believed in predestination, the immortality of the soul, Torah, and the teachings or the preachings. And that's exactly like what we do today. It's like trying to apply the Torah to what's happening in their life today. So they had that going on. And they believed in celibacy, which is probably explains why they're not with us anymore. Because if you want to brand on that a good religion, do celibacy. But they existed between about 250 B.C. and about 100 A.D. Mm-hmm. And they had this leader called a teacher of righteousness. And the teacher of righteousness kind of, he unified that particular group. And he taught baptism, and he taught a communal meal, which became probably the Lord's Supper. And he taught that there was a judgment for the unrighteousness, and that the immortality of the soul had reward and punishment at the end of the day. And they taught an apocalyptic view, the coming of the end. And the Vision of Gabriel is a story about how this teacher of righteousness, who they refer to as the Prince of Peace, mm-hmm. was killed by the other Jewish sects because they did not like him. They left him on a mountain, a hill, to rot. And supposedly Gabriel, the angel Gabriel, came down and he says, "By 3 days live, Prince of Peace and Dung of the Rocky Crevice." Now, he called him Dung of the Rocky Crevice because he was rotting. He was turning back to dung. But here, 50 years before Jesus, we have a teacher of righteousness called the Prince of Peace, who is teaching baptism, a communal meal, all of these things that Christianity has now. Mm-hmm. And we have a three-day resurrection 50 years before Jesus. And I might add that it answers a lot of questions. We had always wondered why Jesus was celibate. Why didn't he marry? What is going on with this? Why
is there really truth to it, though, Joseph?
Well, we don't know. We really...
Because there's the myth that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene and that they had children. You know, there's those stories. Is there any legitimacy to them?
I don't know. What I do know is that in the middle of this Essene library, which is actually what the Dead Sea Scrolls were, mm-hmm. There is this little rock that says that there was a 3-day resurrection before Jesus. So what we do know is that the template of Christianity predates Christianity itself, and that Jesus was very possibly an Essene priest.
Mm-hmm. And a Jew.
Yeah, a Jew, but a very odd sect of Judaism.
Right.
Because remember, there were only three major sects at the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you, there's this whole theory now that religion comes from ancient astrology and sun worship. And there's these videos that have been put out. What are your feelings about, you know, this clarification to some and this video that's being streamed now? And it's gone viral all over the internet.
Well, I can tell you this. If you were to roll back the sky, so to speak, if you were to take the houses and spin them so that you start the story at Virgo, what you have is a story of the Jesus tradition. And it's a very odd thing that everything is written in the stars, starting from the virgin birth and going all the way around to Leo the lion. You have a representation of every single step of the evolution of Christianity.
Mm-hmm. No, I've seen this video. I've seen it a couple of times. A friend of mine, Anthony, has sent it to me, and I've actually seen it before because we have an astrologer on the show, Al Farrell, all the time come on. And, you know, when I saw this, it really kind of like sparked some kind of, questioning to the truth of really did religion come from ancient astrology and sun worship and how the sun rose on the third day and all of those aspects of how Christianity has taken these aspects and put them into the Bible.
Well, we do know that that Christmas, for example, most people know that if they've studied history, that our new year was actually April 1st for a very long time.
Right.
And then, paganism got involved. And
made it April Fool's Day.
Exactly. Yeah. Let me say this. We absolutely positively know that there is, let's call it cross-pollination. For example, you know, Gilgamesh was the Sumerian king that was alive supposedly around 2500 B.C. Mm-hmm. So you go into the Dead Sea Scrolls and you go into one of these caves and you find something called the Book of the Giants. And the Book of the Giants names 200 angels and what their functions were and what they were doing. And in the middle of all of these angels is one of the leaders of the angels. And his name is Gilgamesh. Now, that's some very odd cross-pollination, my friend.
Odd or realistic?
It's very realistic because religion never comes from a vacuum. It always evolves, and that's what we're talking about. Christianity evolved from this type of Judaism. Judaism evolved from a combination of Israelite and Canaanite gods. That's why God is called El in some parts of the Bible and Yahweh in others, because
right.
El was a Canaanite god.
Now, for the record, someone's asking, are you a Christian? I was just Twittered that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am. My stance is this. History and historical fact doesn't interfere with my faith.
Right.
But there was a Christ. As a matter of fact, let me digress just a little bit. I'll finish this. There was a Christ. He did come. He did die. And I believe he was resurrected. I think that he was taken up. Now, having said that, if you're a Jew and you're trying to get your head around the fact that the Bible, the Torah, talks about someone, some anointed one coming and dying, and some anointed one coming to be a king, a leader, a warrior, mm-hmm. you have a problem because there are only three people who are anointed, and that's what Messiah means, anointed one. So the three types of people are priests, prophets, and kings. So at this particular point in Judaism, especially the Essene community, they taught two or three messiahs, not just one. because why should they think that he was going to be coming again? And it's almost like, you know, if you really get down to it, he's a little, let's say he's a dual personality, because he comes as a lamb and he comes back as a lion.
Mm-hmm. So he's modern day bipolarism.
Yeah, exactly. A little schizophrenia. So they couldn't get their head around that. So instead of a resurrection and a return from the heavens, they assumed that there would be two Messiah.
Now, let me just ask you, we have a question right now from a listener. They would like to know, why did Christianity say the only way to heaven is through Christ Jesus? That's only one way, when there are so many. And are there?
I believe we have to come to a point where we discern between knowledge and salvation. Now, the Christian story has it that we have fallen, and that fall takes recompense, takes something to pay for it, and that payment is a life. So Christianity is an oddly exclusive religion, and I think, you know, if you were to read the Quran, really it is being treated as if it's an exclusive religion, but if you read that book, it really isn't as exclusive as Christianity is.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to interrupt you real quick. Speaking of books, there's a great book that everyone go to, Fifth Estate Pub, and that's spelled out F-I-F-T-H, fifthestatepub.com. There you can purchase all the books from Joseph, and there's also a bunch of other publications on there. One book in particular, we're not going to have time to talk about it tonight, but I do want to talk about in the future a great book called Banned from the Bible, Books Banned, Rejected, and Forbidden from the Bible. So that's definitely a book that I want to touch up on. Unfortunately, we're not going to have time to do it tonight, but I'm just reading here. People are so enthralled by this conversation right now. I'm getting text messages, Facebook messages. Joseph, we're going to have you back again. But, you know, just to end where you were saying, can you wrap up for us your thoughts on that question?
The question as to the exclusivity of Christianity?
Exactly, yes.
It's a very difficult one. It really
to
is.
To wrap up.
one that plagues us. It is difficult to wrap up. Let me just say this, I suppose. If you believe that Christ came and was crucified for your sins, then that becomes the absolutely only way to pay for those sins. If you believe that he was a teacher, then you have many, many paths to trod. And I think that is what you have to come to understand in your heart. Which one do you believe? If you believe that he is a teacher that came to teach us how to live, and that is all, then you have many, many paths before you. If you believe that he came for a specific purpose, which was to relieve you of your sins, to pay for them, to give you a fresh start, then you only have one way, because that is the exclusive blood sacrifice.
And your closing thought?
That we are continuing to evolve. As we gather this information, we can't let it get in the way of our personal relationship with God, because I believe, and this will probably set my phone on fire, I believe that we should never have had religion. I believe that religion is wrong. I believe that Jesus came as a mystic, that he came to show us a personal way to a personal God, a direct connection, not through a church or a priest or a religion or a denomination, but directly plugged into the source. Mm-hmm. That, I believe, is the key to making Christianity work, because right now, today, it does not work.
Well, on that note, lock your email, turn off your phone, because I'm sure you're going to get letters. But you know what? It's all the purpose of speaking what we believe is the truth. And I always say to people, I don't want to know your history. I want to know your relationship with God, and if you believe in one. And if not, that's your choice not to believe. Joseph, it's been a pleasure having you on. I know you have surgery this week, so best of many blessings and wishes with that. And I hope if all goes well, we can have you on the show this Sunday if you're available.
If I am off of pain meds, I'd be absolutely thrilled to.
Perfect, because this is definitely a topic that we want to pick up on. I have so many questions here that were written to me by all of my listeners, so thank you so much for those questions. We're going to tackle those the next time Joseph is here. Again, fifthestatepub.com. Go there, buy his books. Every time Joseph's on, I got a great email from you saying that your book sells, so people are listening, Joseph.
Thank you, Max. I appreciate it.
And I hope to talk to you this coming Sunday. If not, we'll plan it for the appropriate time and the appointed time, as we shall say.
Yes, sir. Keep in touch and be blessed.
Likewise. Thank you, Joseph. Everyone, that was Joseph Lumpkin. You know, we're going from couture to crucifixion tonight on Max and Friends, and that's how we do it. Lisa Lampanelli comes on. We drop a few curse words. We drop a few this and that, but you know what? We have sex talk. We have all kinds of talk here on Max and Friends, and that's what makes it a fun place to come to. I want to say thank you to my guest, Farah, who next time comes on we'll have sex talk with. To Joseph, we're always going to have theological discussion with you because you are the man. FifthEstatePub.com. From Jesus to Sex on Max and Friends. Stay tuned for CBS News next. Speaking of CBS, my girl Emily Proctor, who's on CBS CSI Miami. Check your local listings for CSI Miami. She's going to have her baby this week. My fingers are crossed. I can't wait to see. I love you, Emily Proctor. My wishes are with you. To Maria Papa Petros, how you doing, girl? Welcome back to New York. And everyone, stay tuned next week because we have Xavier Lewis coming on. And yes, he's the new R&B master on the airwaves. And then, hopefully, we got Joseph Lumpkin coming back on. Until next time, everyone, have a happy week. Stay focused, and remember to take life to the max. Don't forget, Delta.com flights are on sale now. Good night, everyone. I'm Max Tucci, your host from Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio. Happy holidays.